connecting to the real nerds is so easy. You can go to our website, realnerdspodcast.com. You can like us on Facebook. We have a Twitter account, at Real Nerds. We also have Instagram. You can call us, 720-6NERDS5. You want to email us? You can do that too, realnerds@gmail.com. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Welcome to Denver Comic Con 2016. We have a fantastic interview lined up for you. Enjoy.
All right, we are live here on the floor of Denver Comic Con 2016, and I'm here with author Corinne O'Flynn. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, James?
Great. I'm so glad I said your name right this time.
Oh, it's so easy.
Oh, yeah. It really does feel good. I don't know why I ever said it wrong the first time.
Like, no one has to know.
It just flows a lot better. No. But now they do. You're an author. You've got a book coming out in September, and it's the sequel to your first book. Why don't you tell us a little bit about it?
So the series is called The Expatriate Series, and right. The first book is called Song of the Sending, and the second book is called Promise of the Scholar, and the series follows a guy named James.
Hey, that's a nice name.
It is a fabulous.
That's
it's one
a
of my
nice
favorite
name.
Names.
Yeah, it should be.
It's a good, everyone should have a James.
Yes.
So James Wales lives in a traveling carnival in California with his family.
And I love this kid.
He's awesome in every way. And he was raised knowing that they were all magical people from this other world, but they escaped before their world was destroyed.
Okay.
But then he discovers that his family has actually been hiding him because someone has been hunting him for his powers.
Okay.
And so he has to go back and save the world.
Cool.
Yeah.
Cool. So how long have you been writing? How did you get into writing?
I have been writing with the goal of being an author probably for 15 years.
Which is a very different conversation than just writing.
Yeah, because I'm not like one of those that's, when I was two and I picked up a pencil. No, that was never me. I was always drawn to words. And like I grew up in a house with Scrabble and crosswords and all that kind of stuff. My mom's really big into all that. So I was always a big reader. And I think I went to school for English and creative writing, and it was probably just that trajectory eventually I was going to end up. But it was always this big off-in-the-distance goal, like one day I'll retire and write a book.
Yeah.
This was an unexpected thing that I was able to have the opportunity to write full-time and, you know, stay home and with kids and all that. And, I would say the last 15 years I was probably looking at it as a thing that it was going to happen soon as opposed to when I'm aged.
Right. So it's funny. So I also went to CSU, and my degree is in English with a concentration in creative writing. So I've walked some of that path. And it sounds like from what you're saying that there was sort of a period of, okay, I have this degree. Now what do I do with it? Is that right?
Yeah, well, I thought like when I was going to be when I grew up was an English teacher. Like I was always into words and word origins, and I took Latin and I went to Catholic school, and it was all that.
And to be completely honest, when you're getting an English degree and you say to somebody like, oh, what's your major? I'm an English major. Oh, are you going to
be a teacher?
Yeah. Like, no.
Yes.
No, I'm not getting a teaching
degree. Yes.
Yeah.
I went to UNC and they do teaching there. So you could get a degree in teaching.
Oh yeah. I went to CSU. Same exact thing.
It's all the same. Yeah. So, it was, I don't know. I even forget your question now.
the question was, you get the degree, and you're out of college. Was there a period
journalism.
Of, like, am I really going to do this?
Yeah, no, it was never to be an author. Author was always the secondary thing. It was, like, how do you make a living at this? And authoring is not typically how you do that.
No.
But so journalism was the path that I was looking toward, and I, you know, but that wasn't my thing. It wasn't creative enough.
Yeah. Very cool. Very cool. So you were taking all of those creative writing classes, though. Is there something that you can... I have one, this is totally a leading question. Is there something that you can point to that you learned in those classes of reading other people's writing that is like, that's the moment that my writing changed? That's the moment that like something happened to me and I went, oh, this is how I get better.
You know what? I think that is something that is constantly happening for me. Mm-hmm. I read now as a writer, which is a double-edged sword because it's difficult to kind of immerse sometimes. Mm-hmm. But I think for me, I write fantasy, so world building is always where I get sucked in.
Yeah.
And I would have to say I am completely unoriginal in saying Lord of the Rings. Like, the world building is so complete for me there. But I remember reading To Kill a Mockingbird and being so just feeling like that sense of place.
Yeah.
And I can't say it's one specific passage that clicked for me, but it's always world building. If I'm able to just forget where I'm at for a moment, it's world building.
That's interesting. So then what was the inspiration for the world of expatriates? Was there something that you were like, oh, this is a really cool take?
So the book starts off in Earth present day, and then they cross over to this other world called Belenor. And in my world, in the book, all the worlds are like in different dimensions, and they're connected like on a string of pearls, kind of a thing. And there this thing called the Great Shift, which knocked them off their orbits, so they're crashing into each other, and there's all kinds of stuff. And then the scholars have the power to manipulate energy, and that's what he's for.
That sounds cool.
But the world that they go to is like it's a medieval world, and there's castles and swords and all that, but it's magical. There's fairies, there's other creatures, there's seers, there's the whole mage thing, and I loved reading The Talisman by Stephen King a million years ago. And right. I don't know if you remember this, if you've read this story.
I haven't read it.
There's a kid in the story, and his mother is dying. She's got terminal cancer, and he's sitting in a park bench, and he looks down at the ground, and the sand starts to swirl, and he puts his hand in, and he drops into this other world. And it's like the same kind of terrain, and it looks like it's supposed to look, but it's not. And he's got to save the world. And it's this fabulous adventure. And I loved the idea of the parallel world without it being spaceshipy and... So the bridge to the other worlds is summoned through the mist and the fog, and that's where I went.
Awesome. So I think we've touched on it a little bit, but who are the authors that have really been inspiring to you that are the guys maybe you read now or that you read when you were a kid that are like, oh, that's really what I want to be?
Well, Stephen King was the first when I broke out of the kid shelf, and Dean Koontz and like those fantasy, magical realism kind of creepy, crazy things.
Yeah.
Neil Gaiman, of course, is someone that I read like a lot now. Like I reread Neverwhere and American Gods, and they're coming out in movies. And fabulous.
I saw they just leaked a couple of shots from the American Gods show, which is run by Brian Fuller, which is a fantastic thing. And it looks good.
They're gonna do a good job.
Yeah. Oh. The little bits that are leaking out are people going like, "Hey guys, they're doing it really well."
So excited about that.
Yeah.
Let's see. I can't.
That's about
wow,
it.
I'm running a blank now. Neil Gaiman, what else is there?
Absolutely. And then I had a follow-up question, and then it totally disappeared.
Oh, good. I'm not the only one.
No, it's okay. It's okay. Where were we going?
Inspiration.
We were looking at inspiration. Yes, I had a good... If I try to get the question back, it's not going to work.
Okay.
But that's okay.
Let's go someplace else.
Absolutely. So you've got the book coming out in September. What has that been like getting your... The first book is your first book published, or
yes.
You've had a number before that? So what was that process look like for you? How long did it take to really get that first book published?
That book is an 8th to 10th draft, and it took a long time.
Yeah.
Because it just never was what I wanted. It wasn't what I was seeing in my head for the longest time. And then you talk about how you learn and you pick up things from other authors and you're kind of like just honing your craft. And I think that there was a lot of that. And this book I refused to shelf. Because it was the story that just would not let me go. So the process was a lot more grueling than I anticipated, because there's a point at which you have to step away from the fact that this is a piece of my soul, and it's now a product that I want to sell. And there's certain things, like with genre conventions, and there's certain like structures that have to fit in order to be appealing to fans, and you have to know what those things are, and you learn that by reading and seeing what's popular. So it was a huge education, and I think it's a lot of work, but it's a labor of love, and I'm really proud of it. And my goal was to have it published well, and so I feel like I did that.
How many stories did you shelve before you got to this one?
I have two that are still on the shelf.
Yeah.
One that I'm gonna do, and one that's not worthy.
You're like, I don't think I can clean this one up. Yeah.
No.
So the second book, what did that process of editing the first book affect the way you wrote the second book and make it easier to go through that?
Yes, absolutely. I think when writing that book, I learned a lot about structure for series and how to think ahead, and because you have to plant the stuff that happens in later books in the first books, and you have to know what's going to happen to some degree. So the first book took years to write. The second book is 9 months.
Wow. That's quick.
Yeah, but editing is still happening, and like things are still going on.
Yeah.
But probably a year and a half all told, as opposed to like 6 years.
Yeah.
It definitely the first book informs the next and informs the next and the next. I have other titles that are out that are not related to this series that I have a short story anthology with a publishing group that we've done.
Good.
And that we did it in a year with all of us. And so you just keep on learning, you know, never stop.
So for young writers who haven't gotten to that place yet, I mean, everybody everybody's piece of advice is like, well, just keep writing or write what you love and all of that stuff. And that's fine. It is really true, and it will get you to eventually a place. But what thing do you think was maybe the most critical or is the piece of wisdom you would pass on to somebody who's trying to cross that bridge of, like, I've written this thing. I want to get it to a place where it can be sold or where somebody's going to want to buy it. What was the thing maybe that you looked at where you're like, this is what I was missing, or this is, you know, what I learned through the process?
You're looking for, like, a piece of advice that I can share?
Yeah, for somebody that's in that place where they're trying to figure out, how do I edit this so that it's going to work for consumption?
You have to find the other people. You can't do this yourself. Like, there's you need a production team, and that's regardless of whether you go independent or traditional. Before it hits the shelf, it has to go through, like, all of these motions.
Yeah.
But as far as advice goes, I think that for me, it's a confidence game. Mm-hmm. Like, you definitely have to believe that, not that you're the best or this is the best book ever. Like, you do have to, while you're writing it, yes, it's absolutely the best book ever. You have to love it while you're writing it. But once you're out in the world, like, you know, you're not going to hit the bestseller list on day one. Not everybody does. You may. Like, it could happen.
Right.
But you have to know that this book is worthy, and it has its place. And your job, once you've written your book, is to find the readers.
Yeah.
Like, it's not selling 1 million copies in a week. It's finding the people who love your book. And, you know, this book, I call it the slow burn. Like, I'm finding libraries that have, like, little reading groups, and I'm doing Skype visits, and I'm finding little clusters, and it's my fan base. It's the kids.
Right.
And adults love my story too, but I want the kids.
Right.
So you have to just chip away, keep going, and know that it's not everybody rockets to the top. Like, the slow burn is a really good place to be.
What is it about writing inside of that young adult market that really draws you in? What is that?
For me, I remember being a young adult, and because it was like yesterday, right? And being very vulnerable and insecure, and just not knowing who I was and not being comfortable in my skin. And I have four kids who are young adults and getting to be young adults and teens, and they, you know, you want to empower people to be who they are. And, like, on my little pin, my slogan for my series is Own Your Power, and that wasn't even something that I meant. It came out after I read it, when I was like, oh my gosh, like, this is awesome. Because I think that so many kids, and myself when I was that age, you just don't know who you are, and you might not be satisfied that you are who you want to be.
Yeah.
But the trick is to want to be who you are. Like, you have to own it. You have to just be comfortable with what you are.
That's really cool. Okay, cool. I think that's really great advice. That's awesome.
Thanks.
So I remembered my question that I forgot.
Oh, let's do it.
Yeah. Have you ever read Stephen King's On Writing? It's his memoirs.
Yes. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's so good.
It is. You know what? That's one of those that you keep reading. You reread and you reread. Because he's just, like, you know, some people love him, some people hate him, and some people call him a hack and a sellout. That man is a master, you know.
Yeah.
But that book is so relatable to every single person. And if you're an aspiring writer, that's the book. And Lamotte's Bird by Bird is another one.
Really? Okay.
Have you not read that one?
No, I haven't.
Oh, it's fabulous.
Okay, tell me about it. Pitch me.
Anne Lamott.
Now I've got
you. Do you know who Anne Lamott is?
No, I don't.
Oh my gosh, she's this, like, Renaissance woman. She's fabulous, amazing. She's got these amazing little dreads. she's just an inspiring writer, and she writes memoir and women's fiction.
Cool.
But she wrote this book called Bird by Bird, and the story is it's not a story. It's the title of the book comes from this situation with her brother when they were younger, and her brother was procrastinating, writing this big paper for school, and he had to do it. It was about the birds and the forest and all those other things that were going on, and he was crying, like, how am I going to get this done? It's due tomorrow. And the father's advice was, you're going to do it bird by bird.
Yeah.
And that's her advice on writing. You do it bird by bird. You take it piece by piece. You don't focus on the big picture. You don't focus on writing a 350-page book.
Yeah.
You focus on writing the next scene, the next paragraph, the next chapter, and then it grows into the next thing. So it's you have to take it in, like, you know, you eat a whale bite by bite, whatever
right.
that is.
Yeah.
But no, bird by bird is up there with On Writing.
I think that's really fantastic
Yay!
Advice. Yeah. Oh man. But yeah, I loved On Writing just because it's so personable and, like, shows you what it's really like for this guy who wildly successful.
But he's still a human being who sits at home and writes.
Yeah. And it's also I mean, anybody should read the book just because you also get those stories of, like, oh yeah, I wrote Cujo and then I forgot it.
Right.
Like, there's those horrible sections.
And then
in the
book. This one in the garbage and my wife pulled out of the garbage can. Like,
Right. Oh, I wrote all of The Shining and then realized that I was the alcoholic who was ruining his family's life. And you're like, holy shit.
No, wow. Yeah, it makes it's those things it's that so give good. You glimpses into these people that they're just like us, you know. And why can't you be writing the book that comes out next? You
that's
know,
so cool.
It right. is.
I think it's really inspiring to you know, and to hear you talk about the road that you've taken to get here and to finally be like, yeah, I got multiple
Thank
books
you.
Coming out. This is really exciting.
Right?
I think it's fantastic. Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'm living the dream.
So how really quickly? How can people find you? Where? How do they support you? Where do they find the book?
You can find my book wherever books are sold, and you can go to CorinneO'Flynn.com to find links to everything else. I am all over the place online, and I don't know. I'm available via email if you're a writer and you have questions. I'm all about helping kids get connected to their words. Whatever you need.
That's super sweet. Man.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. It's really been a fantastic time talking to you, and I think it's a really cool sounding book.
Thank you.
So thanks for coming by, and thanks for coming to Denver Comic Con.
And thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Thank you so much for listening to this exclusive interview from Real Nerds Podcast at Denver Comic Con 2016. I'd like to thank Denver Comic Con and Pop Culture Classroom for giving us this opportunity. Thanks. Bye. Real Nerds is a Nebulous Visions multimedia production. We would also like to thank Sparks Mandrill for our music. Additional music from Ben Sounds. Thank you to Alamo Drafthouse. Thank you to Colorado Coins, Cards, and Comics. And thank you for listening to the Real Nerds Podcast.